Now, there we go. I'm going to title the message as, Is There Anyone Out There? I'm going to read from James 1, 19 through 21. My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. Therefore, get rid of all moral filth and evil that is so prevalent, and humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. I titled the message after a song. Some of you may know what it is. Is there anybody out there? It was a Pink Floyd song. David Gilmour, Roger Waters. It was in a rock opera. Eventually it was released as a single. But it was also in a rock opera called The Wall. I don't know if anybody has ever listened to it. It's a masterpiece as far as I'm concerned. And one of the songs in there was a song called Comfortably Numb. And it starts out, hello, hello, is there anybody in there? And just nod if you can hear me. Is there anyone at home? And it goes on and on. And its lyrics are very diverse. You can see them in many different ways. It's not a straight line thought that goes through it. But I think it's kind of a reflection, as I read the lyrics and I listened to it many times, kind of a reflection of life, and that life itself has kind of made you comfortably numb. But I'm sure there's many different things that you can get out of it. This is July 4th. We are celebrating our independence from England. And if you ever wondered why fireworks was always involved, John Adams, in the second year after 1777, he envisioned fireworks as part of the festive celebration, and it's been that way ever since. I found that to be kind of a curious thing. I wanted to know why fireworks was always associated with the 4th of July. So that's where it comes from. I have a story. There was a little stream on the Swiss frontier. There was a Swiss and a Nazi who were fishing on opposite sides of the water. Great success had attended the Swiss, and he had a handsome string of fish to show for his efforts, whereas the Nazi had not even a nibble. Why is it, said the German across the water, that you have so much better luck? Are we not using the same bait? Well, said the Swiss, on this side the fish aren't afraid to open their mouths. We in this country have been expressing ourselves rather freely, and we have an opinion of all sorts. We have been doing a very good job of expressing our opinion. I think the modern day news is basically opinion. There's a little gold nugget in there somewhere, but you have to look for it. I have a very close friend of mine, and I have never seen anybody who can use all kinds of adjectives and beat around the bush and never really say what you ask him. And if you ask him where he's going, he's in the trucking business, same as me. I talked to him, he's a very dear friend. And if you ask him where he's going, sometimes after 15 minutes, you still don't know where he's going. And yeah, I said his lips move like a manure spreader. They spread it everywhere. And you got to look for the little nugget in there, and we always laugh about it. But he's a good person, but that's kind of how it is nowadays. There's a lot of stuff being spread out, and you really got to search and look for what really is the truth. And I wonder sometimes if we really know what the truth is. The truth is we don't know what the truth is. It's a mystery. In this country, we still have the privilege of free speech, but that's as far as the Constitution goes. It doesn't guarantee listeners. Theodore Roosevelt said this about our country: this country will not be a good place for any of us to live unless we make it a good place for all of us to live. I think that's a very true statement of where we're at now, where we're dealing with some of the issues. One of the things that I is near and dear to my heart, as you know, is health care. So I see Theodore Roosevelt's statement as very timely. We need to help everyone, and therefore we all can live better. There is another statement by a gentleman whose name I'm not going to even try to say. And he says, we must stop talking about the American dream and start listening to the dreams of the Americans. We're not listening. We want to say what it is. Our mouth runs into all this and that. Sometimes we get, as James may say, we don't listen. We don't want to listen. We're quick to speak, and then we come upset. But he says it's going to be the opposite way. Justice Earl Warren, I think he was Chief Justice at one time, and he made this statement. We are now at the point where we must decide whether we are to honor the concepts of a plural society which gains strength through diversity, or whether we are to have a bitter fragmentation that will result in perpetual tension and strife. I think that's where we are too today. We are in a place of where there seems to be a lot of tension in our political world. But I also believe that the church is also in this particular spot also. We have to decide whether or not we're going to honor diversity and see that as our strength, or if we're going to see that as a perpetual tension and strife. We need to move beyond each one having a little different idea. I'll speak a little bit more about that later. And we need to start working together. And I also think we need to quit telling, like the person about the American dream. We talk about the American dream. We tell people what to believe, but we don't listen, and we don't understand, or what is your view, or our view. The church has been telling people what to believe for so many years that we simply take it in, and we take it in hook, line, and sinker. We open our mouths and suck it right in, like the fish that opens its mouth, and we simply take it in, and we regurgitate it again. We don't really understand, in my opinion, as well as what we should. What does James have to say to us today? He says everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and I say even slower to become angry. How many times do we automatically engage and without really listening? We don't listen to what someone else says totally. We think what they say. I'm guilty of that. You can ask Colleen. I do that sometimes. She would probably say quite often, but I tend to disagree with that. But nevertheless, we don't always listen the whole way through before we engage our mouth. And then we get upset because there's a lot of things going on. I think the word anger should be replaced with passionate. But I'm a pacifist, so I don't like the word anger, so I like to see it as passionate. I think a person can get very passionate and not be angry. You're still attached to your heart and your goodness, but yet you get very passionate. For me, if you get angry, you lose track of it, you lose your tether, and you suddenly become enraged, and that is where you're not supposed to go. There's enough of that going on around. You can look around, there's road rage. Yeah, I mean, we just had shootings of various sorts. One person shot a young girl as they were coming on the on-ramp just this week, and all kinds of shootings in the hospitals and clubs, and there's anger enough to go around everywhere. We seem to be very upset, and I'm not quite sure exactly why. Well, there's probably lots of reasons. You could probably come up with them. But I think sometimes we're not tethered to a spiritual, ethical, moral groundings anymore as much as what we should be. Many people talk about the time of old when we communities worked together and there was a lot more camaraderie with everybody around us. We have kind of lost that, and we no longer seem to want to work together. I want to spend a little time on get rid of moral filth. What is considered to be moral filth? Now, when I was growing up, I grew up in a very conservative faith, a Mennonite faith, and moral filth was movies, dances, anything that you know had any kind of pleasure to it. No, that was moral filth. Clothes were to show your morals. You know, you had to dress a certain way. You couldn't wear ties. You weren't wearing clothes, and that was a way of expressing your morality. I don't see that as being what he was talking about here, but nevertheless, this is how I was taught and raised up, and I rejected it. I don't think that people have the right to condemn others. I think what Jesus talks about is what is in our heart, not what is in our outward appearance. There are what I call moral filth in our beliefs. We'll start there. What do we believe? Not only in our political scene, but in our theological perspectives, there is what I call moral filth. A healthcare system that is coming down the line that seems to probably, hopefully will not pass, is going to throw some people out in the cold. How many millions of people out in the cold and no healthcare? I call that moral filth. It's disgusting that we can, in this country, that people even entertain the thought. That, to me, is what I, in a political scene, call moral filth. Then we need to get rid of that and look at it in a different way. Low wages, I think, is considered another thing in the political scene. We'll get into spiritual ideas here in a second. The state of Washington, as you all know, raised the minimum wage to $15. But what did they do? They cut everybody's hours so they still don't make any more money. And then they say the program doesn't work. That's moral filth. Then you can go on and on into different things. When you're trying to protect a particular belief at the expense of many others, of everybody else, I call that moral filth in the political scene. We are a wealthy enough nation that I feel that we should be able to take care, especially of everyone. Healthcare should be something that we should be able to afford in this country, and that is an issue that is very near and dear to my heart. I also think that wages, and there's many more things that can come from that. I think the idea that someone can, a big multi-million dollar business who doesn't want to have benefits, and they reap high rewards at the expense of their employees. That's moral filth. So you can decide for yourself. And what the problem is, we have a right and a left, and they consider themselves moral, and they want to protect their own political beliefs, and so they do these things. I think that's wrong. Now, you can move that over into your theological beliefs. I think there are many churches who want to protect their beliefs. And they'll do anything to do that in order to protect them. When I was growing up, one of the things that really stuck out in my head, and I remember for many years and still do today, was that we were going to heaven and everybody else was going to hell. And that was a protected belief. We believed that. That's what was preached from the pulpit, and it's still in some circles even today. Protected beliefs. You are special, therefore God chose you, and you are unique above everybody else. I don't adhere to that. I call that moral filth. And I don't think that James would have went along with it either. I don't think Paul would have went along with it either. That a Calvinist point of view, John Calvin, who comes up with predestination and God's elect, there must have been some fireworks. somebody's agreeing with me. And election and predestination, and that's all you want to see, I call that moral filth. Does God choose and elect people? Yes. I agree that God does do that. But be careful if you say you're God's elect and God's chosen, because most of the people who God elected and chosen in the Bible did not live a very good life. And so you have to take that. I'm not saying he don't. The Arminian view, who says that anyone who will, God will save through Jesus Christ. That's a step forward, but I think it still lacks the whole concept of what Christ came to do. I think that Jesus Christ, or God through Jesus Christ, has a greater power than any other religion or any other religious thought, and he can save the world and everyone that's born in it, and what are we going to do about it? nothing. No theological perspective is going to stop it. And I looked at Romans and Romans 2, and I think Romans, and I've said this many times, and there's other thinkers and pastors and people who think that Romans is Paul's explanation of universal, or at least the possibility of universal salvation. And in there, in verse chapter 1, chapter 2, verse 14, he talks about people outside of the law, Gentile people, who didn't do the law, but yet, or didn't know about the law, but yet the law was in their heart. They acted in consciousness, their conscious worked in order to tell them what was right and wrong. And they were considered to be okay in Paul's eyes, and that he says that this is a very interesting statement. This will take place, and people's hearts will be judged, and on the day God will judge the people's secrets through Jesus Christ, as my gospel declares. I found that statement, as my gospel declares, is what is Paul implying, that there's other gospels? Yes, there was. Even in Paul's time, there were many different perspectives and gospels. So according to Paul's gospel, he's saying that even though people who have never heard about the gospel, who have never heard about the law, but yet act in accordance to it, their consciousness, which is written into their heart, that is counted as towards righteousness. He makes that argument. And I also like the statement at the end of Romans, I've said this to you, read it many times, about that he has bound everybody over for disobedience, so God's mercy can be, so that God can show mercy on everyone, all of them, he says, all. So I do believe that God works in many different ways, but somehow we seem to have in the church want to control who gets it and who don't. I think if it's a free gift, if God's salvation and repentance and forgiveness, grace, and mercy is a free gift, then why is there something attached to it? Some people will even say that, well, you have to reach out your hand and take it. Well, a free gift is a free gift. God calls the rain to fall upon the just and the unjust. So all are affected by the gift. So a free gift is a free gift in my eyes, and whether you do something or not. It said you're supposed to get rid of that, which is all this moral filth and live a life of humility and accept the word that is planted in you. If you go to the verse, a couple verses before, he says that all truth is coming down from the heavenly lights above and does not change. Heavenly lights from above. I find that to be, we talked about at times where godly or your communication goes up and down. There's a communication that goes vertical and horizontal. And the vertical one is the one that you want to have. It shows your personal relationship to God. It goes up. And then you share outwardly. God is love, and you share with your neighbor. So it comes from above. And he says, all good things come from above. The word of truth comes from above. I believe that if you have the right intent in your heart, you will hear and you will listen. I think it's very important to listen. I think it's more important to listen than almost, I can't really say this, but doing. But you must listen. You must have your heart changed before you begin to even act. You must listen and understand before you can act. You don't want to have your mouth wide open and suck it all in like a hook, line, and sinker. You must think. You must have a relationship. You must understand what you believe. Too much of it is just handed out in a box and everybody just simply believes it. We are comfortably numb in our own belief system. You just look around and talk to people. I would probably close now, I believe. I think I'm going to close. I think I told everything, said everything I wanted to say. There is somebody out there. There is a person out there. There is a spirit out there. There are other people out there. If we just listen. Yes, there's a certain amount of comfort when one can relax in their own life, in their own belief system. There's a certain numbness that comes with that. But I think we need to get out of our comfortable zone and start thinking. Make ourselves feel a little bit more uncomfortable. Try a new idea in your head. See how it works. Ask a question. Don't take it just all sucked in. You can be a free thinker in Christ. And it is not what this country is founded on, free thinking and expression of that. If we are considered to be Judeo-Christian principles, then one of the things is the right to freedom to speak, as we have been doing, even in your religious faith. And that's something this church has always appreciated, and I appreciate about it. We have the freedom to speak and to share no matter what we believe. We aren't bound in by walls of theology. So let us be quick to listen, slow to speak, and even slower to become angry. Amen.
pray with you.